So where do we go from here?
To Amelia's weekly fish fry, of course. Welcome, one and all. It's time for a little EE Journal podcasting. I'm Amelia Dalton, and I've got a question for you. Where do we learn what we learn? Sure, college is great, but by the time we get our EE degree, the electronics world has already moved on. By the time you've walked across that stage with a diploma in hand, that stuff you learned in freshman year, well, it's pretty obsolete. But where do we go after that? Where does our continuing education begin and end? My guest this week is Mike Gianfagna from eSilicon, and we're talking about just this, the changing roles of mentorship and formalized education in the world of EE. Let's go. Hi, Mike. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Amelia, it's great to talk to you. Always is.
First, tell my audience a bit about yourself and your role at eSilicon.
In terms of who we are, eSilicon is a fabless ASIC company. We serve high-end tier one customers in networking, communications, artificial intelligence, 5G infrastructure markets. So we're basically doing some of the most complex chips in the world for some of the largest ASIC consumers in the world, typical system OEMs. These things are FinFET class designs. They typically are not a chip at all, actually, but a system consisting of a big ASIC and high bandwidth memories integrated on a silicon substrate and put in a very fancy complex package. So we do that. We also build advanced IP, advanced memories, compilable memories, and we are also now developing SerDes IP. So, you know, we're a combination of an IP provider and a high-end ASIC supplier. So that's who eSilicon is. My role is a little interesting. My title is VP of Marketing, so my main focus in that role is to look at things like our brand promise, our identity in the market, our website, our collateral, and all of that. But I also am responsible for all of our IT infrastructure. And when people hear that, they say, well, were you in the wrong place at the wrong time? You got that job? And actually, it's not the case at all, but there's some strategy behind this. In that role, what I'm worrying about is our business infrastructure, which, by the way, we're migrating to the cloud, our rather massive design infrastructure to build some of these chips. We've gone up a good 20x in size of our footprint here to get this job done. So there's a lot of sophisticated automation. There's a lot of technology behind all of this. And frankly, that technology is part of our brand promise and part of who we are. The sophistication, the design backbone, the automation infrastructure. So to have the guy who worries about the brand promise also worry about fulfilling that brand promise through a key part of the technology kind of makes sense. So that's kind of how those two rather unusual jobs come together under one person.
Okay, so Mike, we're here to talk about continuing education in EE. So a source of continuing education is a lot of times a mentor at the company where we work. So first, why, Mike, do you think mentorship is so important?
Yeah, you know, it is very important. And at eSilicon, we call them subject matter experts or SMEs. They're the senior people who have either been with us a very long time and have the tribal knowledge, the mafia knowledge, you can use any term you want, but they've seen it all. They understand what works and what doesn't work. They understand how our systems work and they understand how the technology comes together. And the knowledge in their head is tremendously valuable. Of late, as we've grown into our Tier 1 focus, we've hired a bunch of additional subject matter experts from other large companies, and the knowledge they bring to the table is just fabulous as well. So those kind of people become so critical to the company's future in a couple of ways. One, as the leaders of design efforts that can help you to get it done in two tries instead of five, because they just know that much, that they know what works and what doesn't work, but also to propagate that knowledge to the other members of the team so that everybody can come up to a higher level of learning. So that is very important, but frankly, it also gives rise to the strategic importance of training beyond just mentorship. And I don't think our industry is that unique. I think a lot of industries are like that, where the experts or the Jedi masters, you know, use whatever analogy you like, those people will tend to lead the rest of the team along and raise up their abilities through the interactions they've had.
Okay, so considering the fast pace of our industry, mentorship certainly can't be the be-all and end-all of continuing education. Do you agree, Mike?
Yeah, we kind of touched on that a little bit in the prior comment. It's really important, but it's not scalable. So there's a real challenge there. So We've been actually been looking at this problem in great detail, and I'd say there's kind of two things that stand out. The first one is you need to somehow replicate or expand the knowledge in the subject matter experts' heads, and training programs certainly help. And we've done that. We have something called East Silicon University. It's a worldwide online environment where you can take either canned courses that are available on demand, or there's live sessions that are conducted by industry experts. And the staff here really enjoy that, and it's a great resource. And we have some subject matter experts, our own, who do training on East Silicon University as well. So that's an important piece of the equation. But lately, we've been looking at it in a different way. Ourselves, like a lot of other companies, have done a lot of research on artificial intelligence and machine learning. It's a great buzzword these days. It has some really innovative applications. And one of the applications we're looking at is a way to capture the knowledge, the aggregate knowledge, both in the heads of our subject matter experts, as well as all of the data, all of the knowledge represented by the terabytes and terabytes of information from all the designs we've done over the years, and to take that information and put it in a knowledge base and provide some machine learning to harvest that information and help allow people to use that to problem solve and troubleshoot things. So it's a combination of training as well as institutionalizing the knowledge base in an easier to access way that I believe holds some really, really big promise for the future. For us, and I think others will see the same thing, it's a way to make the incredible skill required to design some of these high-end chips more repeatable and more scalable.
Okay, so what do you see are the biggest challenges to formalized education, like you were saying, could help solve?
There's a number of things that this kind of training can help with. When you design some of the chips that we have in-house, you know, these are all FinFET class designs, 16 nanometer and below. Each one of these chips is doing something for the first time. That's never been done before. So when you're building in that environment, it's not if there will be a problem or a challenge, but when there is a problem or a challenge, how do you deal with it? How do you address the issue? How do you troubleshoot it? How do you flatten it? How do you move on? Because it's guaranteed that there will be bumps in the road and challenges when you're doing something for the first time. So what we see is the opportunity is to use a knowledge base that's a combination of data that we've gathered from many, many runs and many tries and many try and fail. Oh, that one works. Well, unless you put some energy into it, what worked and what didn't work evaporates as you move on to the next stage of the design. So we've gone a long way to put information in a big knowledge base with some pretty sophisticated machine learning algorithms on top of it to help people understand what's going on and make suggestions on how to do things better. And our subject matter experts are the expert users of those tools, and they enhance them as well. And then we make them more accessible to larger groups of people. So when you do things like that, the real challenge is to say, how do you put together a training program that combines the knowledge of our subject matter experts with the instruction of how to use a sophisticated knowledge base and machine learning algorithms to basically create an environment where you can train people to, you know, the basics are, how does our design flow work? What's the East Silicon way? How do we build a chip? How do we use the tools? What are the processes? What are the procedures? What are the tried and true checklists that need to be followed? That's important. But as important, or maybe more important, is to teach people how to use the technologies we have to mimic creative problem solving of the subject matter experts, so that someone who has just joined the company and maybe is out of school 5 years can start to become a creative problem solver equivalent to a 30-year veteran who has seen everything twice. That's when you can see things like that happening, it's magic, because now the aggregate power of the design team goes up several levels. You start to see the design teams becoming smaller. You don't need as many people. Schedules start to shrink because you can get it done in 2 tries instead of 5, because creative problem solving shows you what you shouldn't do as much as what you should do. It's a real challenge, though, to build those tools and then to build a curriculum that combines or blends the traditional training of how to design an advanced FinFET chip and what IP we use and the processes and procedures we use, along with how to blend in the use of those advanced knowledge-based and artificial intelligence tools to help you with the unknowns, because the design flow will tell you the known piece. That's important, but it's not the most challenging part of the design. It's the unknown parts. It's the bumps in the road. It's the surprises. It's the things that will go wrong because you're doing it for the first time, and how to use the technology and the tools so that you can become that creative problem solver. You can be as good as a 30-year subject matter expert. And you don't have to call that person up and have them fly in and spend 2 weeks at your side, because that's great, but not scalable. You know, we do that too, of course, but you can't scale that in the real world. So you need to have an alternate path to enable these folks to become as bright and as focused and as knowledgeable as the experts. And you can capture that. That's the thing that's different today with the AI tools and the knowledge-based strategies that have emerged, and it's probably over the past 5 years or so. You actually now have the opportunity to capture that knowledge and make it available to others in a way that's very actionable and very meaningful. So that's kind of how we look at training. It's a combination thing. I just mentioned something interesting that we're actually trying to experiment on this. We will be soon announcing an effort that we're going to pilot in one of our remote locations, actually in Bucharest, Romania, where we're going to be developing something we call the eSilicon FAST Academy. Now, FAST has an implication. It's a 6-month program that will take someone from basic skill to expert. That's our vision. Through that very, very intense 6-month training program, the people who are accepted to this program will be exposed to subject matter experts from many different aspects of the design process. Guest lecturers will fly in. There will be lots of online training. And as important, there'll be a lot of training on our advanced technology and methodologies for knowledge-based harvesting and using AI techniques for problem solving. And our goal is to build a graduating class that's substantially better prepared to help us doing these advanced designs. FAST has an acronym, of course, everything does, FinFET ASIC Skills Training. But the FAST part is actually the most interesting, in that we're taking people on a very intensive 6-month process to get them to an expert level much faster than normally would be possible. So this is an experiment we'll be deploying very soon, and we're aiming to institutionalize our design flow, our methodology, and our AI and knowledge-based techniques in a combined strategy that we think will be pretty significant.
Excellent. All right, Mike, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, we have talked about wineries and wine a couple different times here on Fish Fry, but you just told me that we should treat high-tech startups like wineries. So tell me the story behind that.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing. Yeah, you and I have talked about wine. As I recall, I've made some disparaging remarks about wine served at DAC parties in the past, which did earn me some phone calls. So sorry about that, but a wine snob always needs to have an opinion, right or wrong. So this is an interesting one, and I'm going to not mention the actual winery, because I've learned some of this information from some inside sources, so I'm not sure how much of this is public knowledge, but the process is remarkable. And it goes something like this. There's a large winery, and that winery basically said, you know, we really would like to cash out here. We have members of our team that want to leave, and we really can't afford to buy them out, but we'd like them to get bought out so that we can have a different configuration of management and move ahead, but we need more funding to do that. So this venture firm came in and said, okay, guys, here's the deal. Here's the fee that we're going to pay you for the winery, and here's the cash. Now, additional part of this requirement or this deal is that we know that a lot of what this winery is about is because of you people and the way you've built the winery and your philosophy on making wine. So here's the money. We now own the winery. You don't. But you get to continue to run it as you see fit for as long as you like. And just know that when you're ready to retire and step down, we will happily come in and take over the operations from the winery. But that's on your schedule, not ours. So here's all the money. You no longer have the headaches of owning the winery, but you get to run it as long as you like, and then we'll take it over when you're ready. And I think that's just such a beautiful deal. And I think that's how high technology exits should occur. Everybody should get all the money for the exit and then just get to keep doing what they want to do till they're done doing it. And then the acquirer will take it over and continue to run it. That's, as we know, that's not how it works in the real world. And the acquisition, there's tumultuous things that happen the day after, and there's lots of changes in the organization, sometimes good, sometimes bad, certainly traumatic. But I just love the idea of acquiring a business and then leaving it alone until the acquirer is ready to hand over the keys. I think it's a great strategy. I'm not exactly sure how that venture firm makes money doing that, but they've been doing it a few times, so they must know something that we don't know about how to build and manage businesses. So I just found that to be an interesting little data point.
It is. That's a really cool story. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much, Mike, for joining me yet again. It's always a pleasure speaking with you.
As always, it certainly was, Amelia. Thanks for the discussion.
Speaking of chip design, most of us would agree that design rule checking, or DRC, can be one of the biggest bottlenecks in getting a chip out the door. And having it work properly. There's always that. The computation power required for large DRC runs can be staggering. In a brand new episode of Chalk Talk, I sit down with Christian DeCon from Cadence Design Systems and chat all about the Pegasus Verification System, which will have your DRC flying in no time. You can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. You can also check out the Chalk Talk section of eejournal.com or head on over to YouTube, keyword EE Journal. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EE Journal. It is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of September 8th, 2017, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.